Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found, but...
Oh, yeah. Started to burn too many things we found. That's the divine Dar Williams singing with the magnificent Pete Seeger and David Burns, who wrote the words to that song, except for one, Solartopia. And that was me, Sluggo Harvey Wasserman. How are you, everybody? We are back for another hour at the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show here at PRN.FM. Thank you, Jesse, and the crew in New York for getting the show together today. We are on with two fantastic guests. Paul Kangas, you with us?
I am with you, Sluggo. Let's go.
Good. You sound like you're in a tunnel, but I'm glad to have you on the show. David Hughes, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Can you hear me?
Good. Yeah, I can hear you, but I couldn't hear Paul.
What's that?
I could hear you, but I cannot hear Paul.
Oh, that's sometimes a problem. So I'm not how she...
Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now?
Yeah, okay. All right, well, try and... Yeah, Paul, speak up if you would. Paul is in San Francisco, California. I'm in Los Angeles. And David, where are you?
Madison, Ohio.
Madison, Ohio, right next to the Perry Nuclear Plant, which hopefully will be shutting down in the near future. That's one of the things we're going to talk about today. We will start, actually, with the bailout of Davis Bessie and Perry in Ohio. And, Paul, you'll chime in with what's happening at Diablo Canyon. We'll deal with the existing nuclear power plants, the number one threat to the future of the human race, and I mean that with all sincerity and seriousness, the number one threat to the future of the human race is the continued operation of the 440 atomic reactors spread around the world, burning with atomic fires at 300 degrees centigrade, over 500 degrees Fahrenheit. These 440 reactors are frying the Earth. If you want to look for a source of global warming, you can start with 440 so-called controlled atomic reactions all over the planet, five of which have already exploded. If you don't believe me, if you don't want to take it seriously, watch the HBO series on Chernobyl. It's astounding. It's actually the number one watched series in the history of the Netflix and these other services, the Chernobyl. Five parts. Don't watch it late at night. Even for someone who's been with the nuclear issue as long as I have, I found it incredibly disturbing, and I could not sleep after I watched that Chernobyl series. I don't know. Paul, David, have you guys seen the Chernobyl series?
I have not.
Yes, I've seen the first section of it.
Well, you got to watch the whole thing. It's quite astounding, and as best I can tell, pretty accurate. The one thing they do not show, there's a police helicopter flying over. If you're wondering what that is in the background. Of course, in Los Angeles, there is always a police helicopter flying by, but at any rate, they did not. It was very, very graphic, this Chernobyl series, and very true to life, I think, or true to death, actually, and quite astounding in its revelations. A lot of stuff I actually didn't know, even though I was in Kiev in 1996 for the 10th anniversary of the Chernobyl accident. I got to tell you, I was in Kiev. I think the conference was 5 or 6 days, and afterwards, for some godforsaken reason, the people who attended the conference decided to go to Chernobyl, which is absolutely, literally, before Fukushima, the last place on Earth that I would ever go. And this group of people went to Chernobyl. They had to go around and see the area, and one of them was my dear brother, Michael Marriott, and Michael later got cancer and died. And, you know, I remember saying to him at this conference, Michael, we just spent, you know, this horror show discussing what happened at Chernobyl, and you want to go there? And he went there, and, you know, by God, he's gone. So, Michael, you know, we miss you and we love you. And I would never go near that place. So the second half of the show, we're going to talk about the rise of solar, or the continuing continuing progress of solar. And David will discuss especially the wind. Hello? Hey, Paul.
Hello? Hello, I'm here.
Oh, yeah, we're on the radio, man.
Yeah, I know.
Hello, Paul. Okay. So, and then with the second half of the show, we're going to discuss the rise of solar, especially wind power in Ohio, which is being stepped on by the by First Energy and all the criminal utility industry there. And, of course, Paul Kangas is going to talk to us about what he's doing in Paradise, California, with the rebuilding of these homes that were destroyed by PG&E in this horrendous fire, and his dealings to get the housing there remade in solar. Before we jump into that, I do feel obliged. Last week, our show was a riveting, and I mean riveting, discussion of Jeffrey Epstein. And at the time, he was still alive. And we were talking with Bob Petrakis, my longtime investigative journalist cohort in Central Ohio, and the guy's name escapes me now, who wrote quite a bit about Jeffrey Epstein, and we took bets on how long Jeffrey Epstein was going to live, and this was on a Thursday, and on Saturday Jeffrey Epstein was dead. And you know, I'm just reading the headlines today that the autopsy has come up with some very problematic stuff, like maybe that Bill Barr went in there and strangled him personally. And you know, this kind of, I mean, I felt like after an hour of discussing Jeffrey Epstein, with these two experts, and I'm going to put the show up and, so people can hear it, if they missed it last week, because it's more relevant than ever. But after talking about Jeffrey Epstein for a full hour, I felt obliged to go take a shower. I mean, it was ghastly, awful. And this is the age of Trump where everything is sick and twisted and filthy. And you want to listen to something really god-awful, I'll put the... Well, you can go to PRN.fm and dig it up now. You know, here he is dead 2 days after our show last week. And they're just coming back with the autopsy. And there's already questions. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's insane. Either you two guys want to chime in on Jeffrey Epstein before we move into the world of energy here?
Not me.
The global emergency is so important, I ignore all other issues.
Oh, okay.
I will not be distracted.
Well, I look at stuff that could bring down Trump, and, you know, I'm sure there are photographs somewhere with him, you know, with his 12, 13, 14-year-old girls that they hijacked into their spider web here, and I'm sure that Bill Clinton was involved too, but we won't get too deep into that. I do deal with that because, among other things, my history of the United States is just coming out, and there is quite a bit of stuff like this in there, especially in the dealings with organized crime. You know, none of the major history books talk about organized crime. And, David, when we get into talking about First Energy, we do want to discuss some dimensions of organized crime. I will say one thing before we get into the topics of our show. I did see some good news this morning, which is that Elizabeth Warren is now even with Joe Biden in the polls in Iowa. And there is absolutely no doubt in my mind that most or all of the leading Democratic contenders could beat Donald Trump in the popular vote. We'll have to talk more about the Electoral College separately. But in the popular vote, I'm reasonably sure that Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, Cory Booker, Kamala Harris, even Pete Buttigieg, I think, could beat Donald Trump in the popular vote. Joe Biden cannot. Joe Biden needs to be on a park bench feeding pigeons. This guy is absolutely unfit to be running for president or even to be president. And if the Democrats, God forbid, nominate him, we will lose. So I'm glad to see. I like Elizabeth Warren. I think she's a good candidate. I think she's a brilliant woman. I think she'd make a great president. And I'm glad to see that she has pulled up even with Joe Biden in Iowa. And I think if she beats him there, he will sooner or later leave the race. So that's my 2 cents worth. Let's get into the topic of the day. Let's start with the nuclear bailout in Ohio and the complete unwillingness of the governor of California at this point in time to inspect Diablo Canyon. So we'll start with David Hughes up in Madison, Ohio. David, tell us, please. Of course, you live in Pittsburgh, but you're an Ohio boy at heart, and you're in Ohio now. Tell us what is insanely going on with this bailout in Ohio.
Well, for a couple years now, the First Energy, which is based in Akron, Ohio, which owns the Perry plant east of Cleveland, the Davis-Bessey plant west of Cleveland, out in Port Clinton, both on Lake Erie, and the Beaver Valley plant, 1 and 2, down near Pittsburgh on the Ohio River. They've been trying to get legislation passed in Ohio and Pennsylvania to give them just, you know, ratepayer money because they mismanage their company and they're in bankruptcy and they can't compete with their nuclear plants in the deregulated market. So you know how it is in capitalism. If you have socialism for the corporations and the rich, and the working class are screwed, and that's what's going on here. So they've been trying for 2 years, and they finally spent a lot of money to get supporters elected to the Ohio House in Columbus, and they got this total corrupt politician as speaker, and he and his cronies got this bill through that bails out First Energy to the tune of about $150 million a year for their two Ohio nukes, and it ends up being close to $8.5 billion over 7 years. So it passed the House, then it went to the Senate. They had a hell of a time in the Senate getting all the senators to agree on language, but it eventually passed a couple weeks ago, and it passed basically, and then it was sent back to the House for another vote, and it passed essentially by one vote. Had they had one vote less, they would not have passed the bill. So that's how close we came. We mounted fierce opposition for the last year, and especially the last 6 months, exposing this travesty. You know, there's so much badness about it. I mean, we've paid for this plant over and over and over to the tune of several billion dollars, and now they want to make ratepayers all over Ohio who have nothing to do with the Perry plant or the Davis-Bessey plant pay for these boondoggles. Can you hear me? Hello?
I can hear you. Yes, I can hear you.
But I don't hear Harvey.
I hear you well. Okay. Yes.
I think
we
Harvey's
have to fight
not here.
Atomic energy the best we can.
Oh, boy.
The way Germany fought atomic energy was...
Hey, Paul.
Germany built solar-powered houses.
Hey, Paul.
Yes.
We're not...
I hear you.
We're not... Harvey's not here. We're not getting through.
Well, that's okay. We are continuing the discussion.
I think maybe we should call back
in. There's been a technical glitch, but that's okay. He'll be right back in 1 minute.
But I don't know if we're
on the air. The way the Germans... I was in Germany when Chernobyl melted down. And the way the Germans were deciding to fight atomic energy at the time was building fourplex houses with 100 solar panels and forcing the utilities to pay 99 cents a kilowatt hour. That's what Germany did, and that's how Germany has shut down, what now, 22 atomic energy plants. So I think that's better than fighting in the legislature. The carpenters can more effectively fight atomic energy by building solar houses. So that would be my response. How are you doing, David? Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Great. Okay. Well, meanwhile, the technicians are bringing back Harvey in 1 minute.
They sold you that?
That's what I think needs to be done. I'll give you a good example where it just happened last year. In Germany, they had a giant coal mine that collapsed in China, and it filled up with water. And so they just finished installing 160,000 solar panels across the surface of the lake. It is now the largest solar facility in China, and it's near Shanghai if people are traveling that way. I'm going there in December.
Okay.
So, David, what else is happening in Ohio?
Well, the big story recently is that there's been a group trying to get an initiative on the ballot for 2020 to kill that legislation that bails out the nuclear plants.
Right, but David, there have been questions raised about this group. Well, go ahead and keep telling us, but discuss this problem of who. We don't really know who they are, do we?
Not exactly. We don't know. I've been asking, and I haven't gotten any answers yet. I'm not sure. People were supposed to be looking into it, Joe DeMaire for one, and I just haven't heard anything concrete about it. Harvey, how much of what I said got there? You were kind of gone. I don't know if...
Yeah, my phone cut out on me, but we're back.
Is that history I gave recorded?
Yes. No, we're good.
Oh, okay.
My phone cut off, but yours did not. You've been good. And I'm back online now. So what we're concerned about on this referendum, Ohio, thank God, does have a referendum, as does California, option. So we can question what the legislature has done. And by the way, you mentioned a corrupt head of the Ohio legislature. His name is Larry Householder.
Right.
And he's as big as the House. So it seems to be fitting, but and he does whatever First Energy tells him to do.
Right.
And so First Energy now has just outright bribery, bought the legislature to pass this insane bailout, not only for two nuclear plants, but also for two coal plants. They threw in some subsidies to some solar farms, but nothing in the future. So this is a serious situation. And now we have this unknown group who is allegedly challenging they're gathering signatures, and they've actually filed one petition with the Ohio Secretary of State to challenge and get this thing overthrown, this bailout overthrown by referendum. But the what they filed with the state attorney general is incredibly sloppy, don't you think?
Well, honestly, I haven't seen it, Harvey. That's what I'm worried about. Have you seen the language?
Yeah. No, but the attorney general came.
Right.
It's either the attorney general or the secretary of state. I don't remember which one.
The attorney general, David Yost.
David Yost came back with like 18 technical points.
Right. 21.
So this thing was incredible.
Yeah.
21. I mean, this thing was really badly done.
I assume so, but I don't know. I haven't read it. That's the problem.
So what we're looking at here in Ohio is a challenge that we're pretty sure we can win. I mean, you can correct me if you think I'm wrong, David, but I think if we have a legitimate challenge to this bailout on the ballot in Ohio, I don't see how. I think we can win, don't you?
Well, you never know with referendums. You know, I've seen, especially in California, very look like winnable referendums get beat by big money. So it depends. First, it depends on the language. I mean, the language has to be precise. And it has to appeal to ratepayers who are getting ripped off. And if it does that, it should have a good chance. But it's not going to be easy.
No, but I think we'll win.
Well, I hope you're right. But I wanted to go back a little bit before we got to the referendum. I don't know how much time you have.
Yeah, go ahead. No, we're good.
Just how atrocious this is. This bailout for one of the two plants in Ohio, for Perry 1 in Ohio, this was a plant that was announced in the late 70s, and it was supposed to cost $1 billion.
That's good.
It ended up costing $9 billion.
Right.
It should have never been put into the rates. Dick Celeste and Tom Chema screwed people who helped them get elected. The Perry plant did not make the cut in terms of the rules at the Public Utility Commission. It was excess capacity. There was no way to justify including it into the rates. But Celeste and Chema did that on behalf of First Energy back in the 80s, and the plant went online in 87. So we started paying for it, and then in 1999-2000, when Ohio deregulated the electric generation business with Senate Bill 1 back then, we had to pay what are called stranded costs, which means if I'm a First Energy customer and I switch to another utility, I still have to pay for the Perry plant, even though I'm not a customer of First Energy. And that was called stranded costs, and they got another $9 billion in stranded costs that we paid for that plant and Davis Bessie.
Well, David, it went for both Perry and Davis Bessie.
Yeah, I just said that. Cost was for both of those plants. And also in Pennsylvania, we had to pay stranded costs for the Beaver Valley plant to First Energy. So First Energy's made billions and billions and billions of dollars on these new plants, even though they're bad investments and even though the company is so badly managed that it's bankrupt. I was just looking at my files yesterday to try to find something, and there's a letter from September 29th, 1988, to one of our Concerned Citizens members up here in Ohio. It's an anonymous letter from a working employee at the Perry plant talking about how terrible the First Energy management is, how overpaid they are, you know, how they screw the workers. I mean, it's amazing. It looks like it was written yesterday. You know?
Right. It's amazing what these companies get away with at Diablo Canyon in California as well. So let's continue with the Ohio thing, and then we'll talk about Diablo. What our fear is now is that this group that's filing these, obviously they have a lot of money, and they're filing these, they filed one petition already to get a referendum on the ballot. There's an October, I think, 30th deadline, and if they keep jerking us around and keep filing petitions that get thrown out by the AG, we could come up on the end of October and not have a referendum.
Yeah, that's a big concern. It's not that much time. Once you get the language approved with 1,000 signatures attached to it, then you have, you know, until 90 days to the end of October to get the 265,000 signatures plus a cushion of another couple hundred thousand signatures. So,
right.
So there's not a lot of time.
If this is a fake group and they run out the clock, we're screwed.
I don't know if it is. I hear rumors that it's the natural gas money in it, backing it.
Well, there is a lot of fossil fuel money that wants to not have this bailout.
Right.
And weirdly enough, among them is the Koch brothers,
right,
who, you know, don't believe in bailouts except for their own facility.
Right.
So, you know, and God help us. I mean, Perry and Davis Bessie in particular, is really in the running for the most dangerous, most likely to blow up of all nuclear plants in the world. I mean, that Davis Bessie is just a wreck and has absolutely no business, you know, flipping a light switch, for God's sakes. I do want to throw in two things, and David, I'm sorry if I'm repeating one. I will tell you, it is embarrassing, I will tell you what happened to my phone. I'm sitting in California, and I'm outside, and the phone got too hot. I had it covered. I thought it was safe, but the sun heated it up, and so I had to put my phone in the freezer, and it cooled down enough to come back to working. So there you go. If you're sitting on a cell phone out in the sun, you need to make sure it's properly shaded. I thought mine was. This happened to me once before, but we have a freezer outside here. I threw it in the freezer for a while.
I'm one of the few Americans that does not have a cell phone.
Yes, good for you, man. I'm proud of you. So two things I want to throw in here, and then we'll jump over to Diablo, talk to Paul. During the campaign, one of the most disgusting, loathsome, deceptive campaigns in the history of American politics. These thugs at First Energy dragged out all these union workers and stacked them up, you know, in front of the legislature and on the media. We actually had a union worker in the legislature and in front of the committee break into tears over his wonderful job at Perrier Davis Vesey. And within less than 24 hours after the legislature voted the bailout for these two reactors, First Energy announced that it was dissolving its union contract at Perry and Beaver Valley.
Right.
I mean, they didn't even wait a full day to announce that they were going to, their union contract was done. They kept it at Davis Bessey for some reason, but they want to get rid of their union contract after all these union guys got up and debased themselves for this bailout. Were you aware of that, David?
Oh, yes, of course. That's why I think this letter from this employee in 1988 is amazing, because this is a company that has a big track record of, you know, screwing its employees, especially the union members. And really, my dealings with First Energy for 30 years, I really feel like I'm dealing with a mafia, frankly.
Well, you probably are. I mean,
maybe.
You know, it would seem that it is a mob operation, as best we can tell. And nuclear power is thoroughly infiltrated by the mob. I mean, as you'll remember, when they were building Zimmer on the Ohio River, they were, let's see, they were using rebar steel that was supposed to reinforce the reactor to make belt buckles. There was a prostitution ring. There was a gun running ring. I mean, the place was like, you know, Sicily in 1500. I mean, it's just amazing what was going on at Zimmer, and I'm sure it goes on at all the other reactors. The other thing that happened almost immediately after the bailout was Perry had to scram, right? They had a shutdown at Perry.
Right.
You know, God help us if that thing blows. All right, let's switch gears now. Let's switch coast. You're on the North Coast, as we call it, David Hughes.
Right.
Paul Kangas, you're in San Francisco, home of PG&E, Pacific Gas and Electric, another mafia operation. They are running the two reactors at San Luis Obispo, surrounded by a dozen earthquake faults, a mere 45 miles from the San Andreas. And tell us about the most recent earthquake at China Lake. Did you follow that one, Paul?
Just a little. The earthquake didn't register high enough on the Richter scale for me to worry about it, because I've been through, I live in San Francisco. I go through a serious earthquake every other year. And so it didn't bother me, but what it bothers is that San Francisco used to have elephants in our zoo. And they just removed the elephants from our zoo. And as you probably know, elephants are the greatest detector of earthquakes. You can tell an earthquake coming 48 hours before the earthquake hits because of the elephant's ability to detect the stuff. So,
well, what do they do?
Really,
what does an elephant do? What does an elephant do when an earthquake is coming?
This is what happened in Indonesia when that big earthquake hit a couple of years ago, killed 100,000 people. There were a bunch of tourists riding, about 12 elephants at a tourist stop. All of a sudden, the elephants took off running, with the tourists screaming as they're on the top. And the elephants ran to the highest mountain and stayed on top. It would not come back down until after the earthquake hit. So that was an amazing story of the value of having every earthquake area needs to have a dozen elephants just to give them the advance warning, because it's better than any man-made system for detecting earthquakes. And so, yes, but back to paradise.
Wait a minute. I got to ask you, what happened to the tourists? Did they stay on top of the mountain? I mean, I hope they did.
Oh, yeah, they did. They did. They had no idea what was going on, but they jumped off the elephants when the elephants stopped, but then they're up on top of the mountain, and everybody's panicking. But you can see that stuff on YouTube. There's videos of the elephants running away with the tourists in Indonesia.
Well, Dave,
the story.
Jump here. David Hughes, you have a place near the Perry nuclear plant. Maybe you should bring in an elephant.
Good idea.
Well, it's interesting with Paul saying, because I have many visits to Southeast India and many friends there, and when that major tsunami, the earthquake and the tsunami was in that region in 2004, Christmas, everybody told me that all the animals, not only elephants, all the animals ran to the high points of the hills.
So were the poles good? Everything. Smart enough to get up there with them?
I guess they just are more sensitive to vibrations in the land or something. They knew it and they left.
And well, it is because of their large feet and their large mass that they somehow the waves scare them, and it agitates the ear bones, the three ear bones in their ear, the hammer, the anvil, and the stirrup, and so they get scared by the noise and the feelings in their body, and they run.
Why did they remove the elephants from the San Francisco Zoo? What stupidity is that?
Because the crazies in this town think all the animals should go free. You know, turn all the chickens free. So they got they sent the elephants down to Florida, I think, somewhere.
Oh, for God's sakes!
But yeah, it was a mistake. Terrible mistake.
Well, I think we should have a serious campaign for the city of San Luis Obispo and the town of Avila Beach, where Diablo is, to have a pen full of elephants, so have it open so when the earthquake comes they run and we know, and they should shut the nuclear plant.
Yes, absolutely. In fact, tie a chain onto the elephants that is attached to the shutoff switch.
That's good. I like that. Well, of course, Perry, you know, the first reactor in the United States to be damaged by an earthquake was Perry on Lake Erie, right, David?
Right. And the fault line goes right under the plant.
That was in 1986. And, of course, as 86. They're discussing bailing out the reactor, there was a 4.0 about, 22 miles from Perry, right?
Right. Not even that.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, just southwest of it.
Well, I brought up Paul Kangas, the earthquake at China Lake, which is about 200 miles from San Luis Obispo, because it was a 6.1. And if that 6.1 had hit at Avila Beach, you know, the only thing on the news today would be the radioactive cloud that poured into L.A. and killed 10 million people. I mean, that's basically what would happen if a 6.0 like I say, it was a China Lake Ridgecrest. If that had gone in, been 200 miles over, so a little bit to the southwest, you know, Perry would be a Davis Bet. I run through the litany here. Diablo Canyon would be a pile of smoldering radioactive rubble. Anyway, so, Paul, real quickly now, because we want to get to paradise and talk about solar, and David, I want to talk about wind in northern Ohio. Tell us what's happening with the attempt to get our liberal governor here to inspect Diablo Canyon.
Well, yes. As you know, there's a bankruptcy proceeding in San Francisco concerning PG&E. And every day there's a headline story of what the judge and PG&E are doing in court. And Harvey and I have filed a intervening lawsuit in order to have standing to have some input, but so far they haven't entertained it. You mentioned, I have to go back to one thing. You mentioned the media is ignoring the danger. Greta Thunberg, who you probably know, just criticized the celebrities and the media in a major speech she gave at the United Nations office in Poland. 2 days ago, saying that the media is totally ignoring the danger of the climate emergency and the atomic energy emergency. And so I'm following Greta Thunberg. Now, back to paradise. We have a situation in paradise where I was invited up to speak, and 25 families have signed up a petition with me to try and get the government in California to pass a law allowing fourplex houses to be built on the footprint of each single-family house that was burned down in Paradise. About 60 or 70% of the houses in Paradise were burned down. And yesterday, the money is supposed to be released. They've signed an agreement to start paying the families in Paradise who lost homes. Also, at the same time, the state of California has actually introduced a law to allow the building of fourplex homes on the footprint of a single-family home that is destroyed by fire or any other destruction. And I hope it was some of my input.
Paul, do you have any idea what that thing is, that buzzing is?
Say that again.
You got a something going off in the background. Do you have any idea what that is?
What's going off? No, I don't.
Do you hear? Okay.
But, that's
David,
beeping
is that
in the background?
No,
yes, I think it's
here.
My oven. Let me go and turn off my oven. But anyhow,
okay.
We're moving forward in Paradise because the money has started to flow, and we've got 25 people signed up to...
Wait. Can you get your oven turned off there?
I'm looking for the source.
Is that a fire alarm?
Throw it on the back porch. Fire alarm. Something's burning in the kitchen. But
I hope it's not the Diablo Canyon nuclear plant.
Right.
But I can't see it. I don't know where it is.
Can you go? Are you got a cell phone? Can you go somewhere else?
No, we're under control. It's just I don't know where the alarm is that's going off.
Well, do me a favor. Let me talk to David. And let me talk to David and call me back. Oh, there you go. There you go.
Well, no, I'm okay.
All right.
So,
thank
anyhow,
God. There you go.
So here's the plan that I've worked out so far. I'm now lobbying to start a sort of a Peace Corps type committee for the state of California, which would be called like a solar committee. And what it would do is it would hire high school students and pay them $20 an hour for 20 hours a week of working in Paradise to help build fourplex houses, each with 100 solar panels and a battery. Since we've got a California law is moving to be passed very soon, this will help Paradise a lot. And since the money for paying such a solar Peace Corps would come from the military budget, so if I was president, I would create it and use the military budget, but somehow I'm lobbying for this. And that way their medical insurance would come through the VA, and this is a whole plan I've worked out to be able to hire students and help create housing, because California has a housing deficit because of the policy of building only solar family houses or single family houses or giant apartment buildings. So now by pushing for fourplex houses, we balance out the housing crisis in California. And it also generates money from the 100 solar panels on the roof. And this way it lowers the cost of housing because if you're getting money from the roof of your solar houses, feeding it into the grid and PG&E, if we can somehow during this bankruptcy force PG&E to pay like 39 cents a kilowatt hour to these pioneering solar home builders, we could lower the cost of a mortgage in California using solar and that way create a solar economy. That's my big vision.
You have a contract. When last we talked, you told me that you have a firm contract to build a solar fourplex in Paradise on a building lot where the house was burned down by PG&E. Is that right?
Yes. I've got even more than that. I've got 25 landowners who've got nothing but a lot left in Paradise, all agreeing to work on this project. And so we're going forward. Now that the money was released yesterday, now we can actually get serious about doing this. And I talked to a couple of architects, none in that area, but I now that the money's moving, I can move much faster on this thing. But the most important thing was I recruited 25 families who all lost their homes to work on this project. And I gave them this, we had a long two-hour discussion on the value of building fourplex houses. And this was before the law was introduced in California. So all the pieces seem to be falling into place here in California to help rebuild paradise. And in the process, create a plan, a model, a strategy for replacing other lost housing all over California. And at the same time, generating a lot of, putting a lot of solar panels on a lot of roofs. And plus, electric cars have been introduced now. So I have a lot of hope that we can actually stop global warming in the next 5 years if we can use the California model of what's going on here in the middle of this crisis.
The number one strategy to fight global warming immediately is to plant a trillion trees and also an ocean of hemp. And that we can do very quickly. The most optimistic or encouraging headline story that I've seen in the last while is that there was a single weekend in India where they had 1 million people who went out and planted 220 million trees, which is, is fantastic. That's the way, that's the short-term solution to the global warming crisis, is to plant a trillion trees and an ocean of hemp. David, you said you'd been in India, but you're also in northern Ohio. You want to talk to us a bit about the wind power situation in northern Ohio?
Well, in northern Ohio?
Yeah,
I'm not sure what you mean, but there's been attempts for a long time to get turbines out on the Great Lakes, for example, on Lake Erie in Ohio, and it's always getting sort of blocked by various barriers. I don't know much about the wind issue in Ohio because I haven't worked on that. I haven't had time.
Let me tell you real quick.
You know more.
This is a big piece of it, and I raised this issue in front of the committee in the State House.
Yeah.
The Ohio State House is, being in the Ohio State House is being in the Night of the Living Dead, man. I mean, it's just unbelievable. So in northern Ohio, there's very, very good wind. It's not as powerful as in the Great Plains, but it's strong and steady. And what's great about northern Ohio for wind is it's flat, and the farmers really want wind power because it's very profitable. And it's also crisscrossed with transmission lines, which is a big challenge. And in the Dakotas and Minnesota, you got to build these big power lines. You don't have to do that in northern Ohio, and the wind sites are close to the cities.
Right.
But the criminals in the Ohio legislature in 2014 or so,
right,
stuck into the code a setback clause.
Right.
Has absolutely no basis in anything except killing the wind business. And we're hoping, as part of this pushback on the bailout, to get that clause removed from the Ohio code, which would be a really great thing. And we'll see if that happens, because it's actually $4 billion worth of wind farm contracts sitting in the wings waiting to be built in northern Ohio if they could get rid of that ridiculous setback clause.
Right.
It's really unreal. So, Paul, here in California, we have had no success in getting either the courts or Gavin Newsom to do anything about inspecting Diablo Canyon. Have there been any new developments that we can talk about of any value?
Well, no, there isn't. But the best thing we've got is we've got so many crises going on in California simultaneously that we can't ignore the Diablo Canyon danger, because this is a bigger danger than the fires even. And it's being ignored. You mentioned the trees earlier. The only good news I had on the trees, I read a newspaper called China Daily every day. And about a week ago, they reported, they have this massive fight against desertization going on around the Gobi Desert. and they've planted, I think, 20 million trees in the last year around the Gobi Desert to take back the desert. So China is pushing the tree idea very hard. They have thousands and thousands of volunteers out there, and they have the army actually out there helping plant the trees. So you're right.
Well,
planting trees is very necessary.
To put it in perspective, in the 1930s, when the Dust Bowl was happening, Franklin Roosevelt used the CCC, and there was a huge deal, the Civilian Conservation Corps, and they went out to the front range of the Rockies because they wanted to slow down the winds coming off the Rockies and blowing all the dust up in the Great Plains there. And they planted 32 million trees. And Franklin Roosevelt actually made a quip that his real profession was that he was a tree farmer. But 32 million trees was considered, an astronomical number. And now for the people of India to get out and plant 220 million in a single, seven times as many in a single weekend, that's a big deal. And we're also seeing, the idea, the spread of hemp, which is a great enemy of global warming. There's also people, by the way, who've been trying to reclaim the Sahara with tree planting. So let's hope that happens and happens really, really quick. So, Paul, how much solar do you think is really going to happen now in California? You've got, how long is it going to take you to build this fourplex? And you think the rest of paradise is going to go that way?
It takes about 6 months to build a house. At age 14, I actually built a house because I used to live in a small house with my two brothers and two sisters, and three brothers all slept in the same bed. So I told my parents I was tired of sleeping in the same bed. So my stepfather told me, well, you see that corner lot over there? We lived on a big piece of land. He said, you can go build your own house right under the mulberry tree. And I did, with his help. He brought me all kinds of free lumber from the railroad yard where he worked. And so I just built a house, which is still there. So it does not take long to build a house once you get things going. I've got the bank loan lined up, got the land lined up, got 25 families committed to doing this. So I think
If you got 25 families committed to a fourplex, you should be building six fourplexes, shouldn't you?
Well, the problem is most of these people are in their 50s and 60s, and they're still debating whether or not to rebuild. These are just the 25 families that signed up when I was up there speaking about 2 months ago.
Well, that would be a fantastic thing to see. Paradise. What did Trump call paradise? Pleasure. I guess he was thinking of Jeffrey Epstein at the time. If paradise, California, what do you think the odds are that whatever is going to get rebuilt there will be 100% solar?
Well, that's one of the big debates, is because they love their trees. And there's no trees in a lot of paradise now. So I said, but the trees are gone. The houses are gone. The trees are gone. And so a lot of people lived there because they liked the trees. And so they don't like the idea of building houses on a lot where there may not be a tree on the lot. But that's the reality, simply because the trees are gone right now.
There's a solution to that. Obviously, the problem is you don't want the tree to shade the house, so the solution is to build short trees.
Or build them on the north side of the house. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
And it's not as sunny as L.A., but there is enough sun up there to enough sun hits the city of Paradise in 1 hour to power the whole city for 1 year, according to Al Gore. That's a quote out of his movie. And he's right. I've gone up there and looked at the central. In fact, I follow the weather in Paradise to try and keep track of how much sunlight they do get. And they get enough to power the whole city. So it's just a matter of the will now, if people, I know there will be a couple of people who will stick through this project. And if, once I get it going, more people will be attracted. And I think because this law is passing now in California, you know, the wind's to my back right now. Everything's going in the direction I need to get this thing done. If I can get one fourplex house with 100 solar panels built, I can get the process started. And my strategy is the idea of also somehow tapping it. If I was the president, I would tap the military budget and use it to fund this project. But I'm not the president this week, so I'm doing the best I can.
You could use the military itself. I mean, bring all these people back from Afghanistan and the 800 bases we have around the world and solarize the country. It could go overnight, right?
Well, yes, David absolutely. Hughes. And I'm a member of Veterans for Peace, so I've been trying to recruit veterans to participate in this project. I'm going to find some veteran who would like to live in paradise and help me build one of these fourplexes.
Well, fantastic. David, do you have solar on your place in Madison there?
We don't have it here in Madison. We're only, this place is only actually open 3 months a year. But I have it on my permanent residence in Pittsburgh.
Oh, you do? Fantastic.
Yeah, so I don't pay for electricity, basically.
You have a home that you own, and you have electricity, and you have solar, and you're self-sufficient?
Right.
Mm-hmm. You have a battery?
No, I don't. But we have a fairly good net metering rule, so I get, you know, credit and money every month kicked back to me on that.
Oh, wow. Fantastic. Yeah. How about an electric car or a hybrid?
I have a hybrid. It's still in pretty good shape. It's a Honda Insight, so the next car would be maybe possibly a plug-in. But I want to mention
Fantastic.
Something, Harvey, that is very important in this fight on nuclear power generally.
Yeah.
As you know, well know, and I'm sure Paul does, the pro-nuclear industry is suddenly concerned about climate change in the last couple of years. These bailouts. Suddenly they are promoting nuclear as the answer to climate change because it's emissions-free. It's zero carbon energy source.
Well, that's a lie.
It's a lie. And yesterday I got the latest annual environmental and effluent release report on the Perry plant. It's 2018 is the latest. And if we could get the media to even do a little story on this, we'll be making progress because the amount of stuff that they release is amazing, but if you say to the, you know, nuclear proponents that these plants routinely vent pollution, you know, like radionuclides, for example, and some of the deadliest gases known to exist, they'll say, yeah, but we're talking about greenhouse gases. And what this report shows right here is that, of course, they vent routinely carbon-14. But what
right,
the interesting
absolutely.
Thing is, it's vented as carbon dioxide. It's vented as CO2, which is a flat-out greenhouse gas.
I mean, absolutely.
But nobody knows this, and they've been very successful in getting everybody, particularly politicians, to run this mythology that nuclear is zero carbon. I mean, it's just amazing. And I every time I talk to a reporter, that's what I raise. You know.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, the line I use is that no windmill ever killed a fish. David Hughes, Paul Kangas, you guys are great. Thank you, guys in New York. I'll be back next week in Solartopia. And let's have solar in paradise, and let's shut down all the nuclear power plants. See you, Paul. See you, David. And see you, everybody, next week in Solartopia.